You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, everyone. This is Kurt Sumner, your host for NSPS Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us again today. Always happy to have our listeners, whether live or, well, hopefully they're all alive when they're listening, but listening to us live and or through our podcast later on, as so many of you do. But in any case, thanks for being with us again today. All of you who are regular listeners, and probably some of you who may not be regular listeners, are aware of the fact that NSPS has been following what a few years ago was known as Light Squared. It was a big topic among our constituent base, as well as other friends in the geospatial world. We were part of a big discussion out at an ESRI conference several years ago where a representative of Light Squared was there, and a lot of discussion after that. You'll also remember that Gavin Schrock and Eric Gackstatter have been kind of keeping their hand or their finger on the pulse of all this. But for the rest of us, the day-to-day folks who are doing what we do for our profession, I won't say we've forgotten it, but certainly it's not been necessarily top of mind with us until recently, when we were informed that a new version of Light Squared called Legato was created, or at least evolved, and we're going to find out more about that today. That's why I'm prefacing this, because I thought it was a good time maybe to bring this to the forefront. I can't even speak about urgency at this point, but my guest is probably going to give us some thoughts about that. So welcome, Tim Farrar, for being with me today.
Thank you.
Tim is the president of TMF Associates, or Telecom Media and Finance Associates, out in Menlo Park, California. And we were put together through Gavin, as a matter of fact. As I was talking about wanting to discuss this topic, Gavin suggested that I talk with Tim because he has been, I don't know if on top of this is the right term, perhaps it is, but certainly aware of all that's been part of the Light Squared and then its evolution, if that's the right term, into Legato. So, Tim, I really appreciate you being with me today. And before we get too deeply into our conversation about that, it's, I always like for my audience to know about my guests. So tell us something about yourself and how TMF came to be.
Yeah, so I've been involved in the satellite industry for 20-some years. Originally, back in the UK, I worked on strategic planning as a consultant for a number of the mobile satellite systems that were proposed in the late 1990s, Iridium, Globalstar, ICO, Teledesic, and that brought me to the US in 1999. A couple of years later, 2002, I set up my own firm, TMF Associates, and have been working as a consultant and also publishing research in the satellite sector ever since. So that started off with some of the mobile satellite systems that I'd been working with for several years. It devolved into spectrum issues, because obviously a lot of those players have sought to reallocate their spectrum for terrestrial use, and it also evolved into some of the broadband systems that we see today. A lot of those people, you know, a lot of those ideas from the 1990s are coming back into vogue now with the advances in satellite technology. So there's a lot of interest in the satellite industry. It's been a fun place to be. On the other hand, a lot of the investments over the years haven't been terribly successful, and many of the attempts to exploit satellite spectrum for terrestrial uses haven't been very successful either.
That's one of the things I think that we miss in our everyday work, probably as anybody, but certainly as surveyors, because we hear a lot about investment and we hear a lot about what people are doing, and often what we see in our businesses is the end result of those investments in new technology, new equipment, new ways of doing things, all of those things, and all the people who listen to the show have heard me say these things hundreds of times, but you know, I got my start in surveying back in the mid-60s. So things have certainly changed a lot throughout my lifetime. But it just seems to be changing more rapidly now than ever in the past. So we are certainly, as I said before, interested in the issue, but but it isn't necessarily top of mind every day. But one of the things that you just said about investments, some successful, some not, I think that's a part of it that, that we don't grasp. We only hear about the successful ones. So I don't know if you have anything to say.
That's right. I would say, you know, back in the 90s, people believed that satellite phones, would be a huge thing. There'd be tens or even hundreds of millions of users of satellite phones because they didn't think that cellular would spread out all over the world and particularly in developing countries. So back then, the thought was you'll have your cell phone and it'll have a satellite capability in there, and you may use it every so often when you go to the mountains or the beach or to some developing country. It didn't work out at all like that, and obviously satellite phones are incredibly useful in somewhere like Puerto Rico when the entire cellular network is down, or they're useful in the middle of the ocean or on a plane, but they're not part of everyone's everyday experience. And so, you know, what happened after that sort of failures at the end of the 1990s when billions of dollars were invested in systems like Iridium and Globalstar, and almost all of that was lost in bankruptcy, was that people came along and said, okay, well, you know, all this spectrum has been set aside for satellite phones, but that clearly isn't a very successful business. So let's look at how we could repurpose some of that spectrum for terrestrial uses. Those obviously have been expanding. It's very valuable spectrum for those sorts of uses, and not so valuable in the satellite world if those business plans aren't going to work out. So there's been a huge effort since about 2001 onwards by different players to repurpose what were originally satellite allocations of spectrum for terrestrial use, and they hope to, in most cases, sell those off to a big cell phone company like an AT&T or Verizon and have them pay billions of dollars for that spectrum, even though the original allocations were made to these satellite companies for free. It's seen as obviously beneficial for those investors. It's also to some degree beneficial for the FCC and for the general public if more spectrum is made available for cellular, and therefore people's can download more data and use cell phone networks more widely because they can get more data throughput.
Yeah, that you're mentioning the whole spectrum element of this, I think, is an interesting part, and it's something our listeners would be interested in knowing about, because typically for us in the surveying profession, we understand that there's spectrum out there, and it's divided up in various elements, and that we use GPS and we get data coming through that usage. But other than that, I'm not so sure we have much of an understanding of it, honestly. So when the whole idea of spectrum comes about, and of course then when LightSquared came along, and then it was a pretty popular word, okay, where's the encroachment going to be, what causes all that? So when you were talking about spectrum at first being free, so how has that worked over time? Have the elements of spectrum been allocated fully, or do the same people still hold on to them that were allocated back in the free days, or how does that all work from a business perspective?
Well, if you look at it on the cellular side, you've got AT&T and Verizon. Their original spectrum holdings, which were allocated in the early to mid-1980s, were allocated to the predecessor companies for free. More recently, cellular spectrum, since about the mid-1990s, has been auctioned by the FCC. So every time a new band has been allocated, the FCC has run an auction, and some of those auctions have raised many billions of dollars. We just had one earlier this year which reallocated spectrum from TV broadcasters to cellular, and that raised about $19 billion. Some of that went to the broadcasters to compensate them for giving up the spectrum. Some of that went to pay for the relocation costs, and about $7 billion ended up going to the U.S. Treasury, for whatever Congress wants to spend it on. So a lot of that has been very successful, and there's always a demand for more spectrum in the cellular world. The satellite people, as I say, were allocated that spectrum for free because they were providing satellite services internationally, and it would be very difficult to provide services on a global basis if you had to pay in each individual country for your allocation of spectrum, especially if you had to pay something comparable to what the cellular players who are, you know, making billions and billions of dollars of revenue are willing to pay for spectrum. So there were two main bands allocated on a global basis, and particularly in North America, the L-band spectrum, which was the original allocation, and the predecessor companies of LightSquared, originally American Mobile Satellite Corporation, was allocated some of that. Inmarsat was allocated some of that on an international basis, and there are a few other players in various regions scattered around the world. There was another band called the S-band, which was a higher frequency, which was allocated later on. And that band never really got fully developed, and that spectrum was later reallocated to terrestrial uses, and Dish Network owns that spectrum in the U.S. Other people are still arguing over it to some degree in a number of other parts of the world, and whether it will be ultimately satellite or terrestrial spectrum. But the L-band spectrum is allocated for satellite on a global basis. Inmarsat uses most of it internationally. They share it roughly equally with LightSquared, now Ligado, in North America. That's the spectrum that everyone is concerned about because it brackets the GPS band. There's an uplink band at 1626 and above. There's a downlink band at 1525 and above, and GPS sits right in the middle of that. So that's what everyone is concerned about. When people are using it for satellite, there's not very many satellite terminals out there. A lot of those are on planes or out at sea or on a ship. They're not going to necessarily interfere with your surveyor in the middle of a city, especially since most people in a city are going to rely on a cell phone rather than a satellite phone.
Yeah, that makes sense. And believe it or not, we're a minute away from our first break, so the time does go quickly for sure. But when we come back, you talked about the bracketing the GPS band with the L band, and maybe we could talk a little bit more about that so we as surveyors get a clear picture of where we are. I mean, when you say it brackets the GPS band, I guess the first thing that would come to somebody's mind is, okay, does that begin to squeeze the thing at some point? Or, as you say, there's some overlap in there that can cause issues. So maybe we can get on that when we come back from the break, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, yes. It's a very complex technical issue, and there's a lot of questions about both the receiver side on the GPS side and on the transmit side on the satellite and potentially the terrestrial side.
Good. Well, let's go take that first break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Maybe David won't get angry with me. I broke 5 seconds early, so maybe we won't get in trouble. I know this is all old hat to you, but for my listeners, it's very.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Field books. There is a difference, and the difference is made in the USA by family-owned and operated Bogside Publishing in New Hampshire. For over 38 years, the family business has produced the finest, most durable, rain-resistant, and most affordable field books in the land surveying and engineering industry. Demand the best from your supplier, Bogside Publishing Field Books.
Quick Stakes is your answer to staking. Lightweight, easy to ride on, easy to use, easy to find, and won't break your back carrying them like the old-fashioned wooden stakes. Have you tried a sample? If not, get a pen and paper and write down this number, 800-438-0387 or go to quickstake.com. That's QUIKSTAKE.com and order your samples. Ask your surveying supply dealer for Quickstakes today.
Bogside Publishing. For over 38 years, this family-owned New Hampshire business has manufactured the most durable, rain-resistant, and most affordable made-in-the-USA field books for the land surveying and engineering industry. And Bogside Publishing is still doing it today. Demand Bogside field books from your supplier or go to bogsidepublishing.com for a list of exclusive Bogside dealers.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
We're back with Tim Ferrara today talking about GPS bands and the light squared Legato issue as part of our discussion. But it's been an interesting conversation so far, Tim, just to hear this background that you're providing for us. Because as I said, it's like anything else. You know, as surveyors, we think people take for granted the equipment that we have because it's you just use it, right? And I guess in the same sense, we sort of take advantage or take for granted what is available to us without really thinking about all of the what all goes into it and what the issues are. So it's a very great conversation to have. And before we went on break, you were talking about the GPS band, and you mentioned that the L band brackets the GPS band, and I had mentioned that in a surveyor's mind might mean squeeze. So maybe you could talk about how that works.
Well, it's you could say squeeze. I mean, in the way it was actually originally set up as a protective device, because the satellite users are so scarce. Originally, in fact, it was set up to be used mostly for maritime and later aeronautical applications. And so there was intrinsically some level of separation, from land-based users. The general perception was that the satellite band was a fairly quiet band, just because we're talking about satellite usage. There are maybe a couple of 100,000 ships out there with L-band terminals on board. There are a few tens of thousands of aircraft with satellite transmitters on board. There are something like 500,000 handsets out there, satellite phones in the world, not the tens of millions that people originally anticipated. So just the sheer density of those devices is pretty low, and the chance of someone standing next to you when you're using your surveying equipment and trying to use a satellite phone is not particularly high. So because of that quietness or relative quietness of the satellite band, there was never a big worry for people making GPS equipment about noise in the adjacent bands. And one of the big questions difficulties here is that those adjacent bands were allocated for something else. They were allocated for satellite originally. Because GPS didn't have to worry too much about a lot of users there, there was never a lot of thought given to how much was needed in terms of filtering to keep noise out from those adjacent bands. And that's the heart of the issue here is, sure, you have transmitters, and you have to keep control of those transmitters. You also have a receiver in the GPS band, and that receiver can be more or less sensitive to noise either in the same band or even in adjacent bands.
So just thinking that from the layman's perspective, it sounds as though with the design of GPS units for whatever purpose, and of course for surveying purposes, they're quite precise. It sounds as though because there was nothing really happening around those bands at the time, or even maybe perceived that it would ever happen, I don't know. It sounds as though that meant that the design for the receivers to be able to capture the signal was maybe not as, I don't know what the right word is, and I'll use the word precise, but maybe not to the point where you focused in on a much more narrow signal that because you didn't, weren't having interference. Does that make any sense?
Yes, that's right, exactly right. I mean, people did not think about the likelihood of interference, and the wider band signal that you receive in your GPS equipment, the more precise the transitions will be, because you're receiving a wider set of signals. You can get what effectively you're measuring with GPS is the transitions from one state to the other, and the wider the signal band, the more precise those cutoffs can be measured. And so when people weren't thinking about interference, they were just trying to get as good a measurement as possible to be as precise as possible in terms of precision, and that pushed them towards using wider and wider band receivers. So because interference was not really thought about as a concern, people naturally evolved their devices in that sort of direction. And then, everyone went, hold on a minute, now we've got to think about this interference and think about whether we really, are susceptible to people transmitting in adjacent bands. Different solutions have different levels of resilience to those sorts of issues. It depends on exactly how the GPS receiver was implemented, the degree to which it's sensitive. But, that's an issue that's really only come up recently for GPS. If you think about it in terms of the cellular world, it's always been a concern for people building cellular receivers because those receivers have huge numbers of different signals impinging on them. Your cellular radio has got the Bluetooth signals, it's got Wi-Fi, it's got transmitters and receivers in different bands. They've got an awful lot of noise to deal with, and so cellular radio designers have always been concerned about filters and making sure that things work as efficiently as possible. They've not had to measure with the precision that a GPS device has had, wants to measure with. They've not been concerned about wideband signals. So they're just very different design objectives. And now, that's really where this conflict has come from, is that the design objectives of people making GPS receivers have not been motivated by the same criteria as the design of cellular receivers. And so when a cellular transmitter comes up next to a GPS receiver, the different design objectives, are in conflict.
So, and that's where the, for lack of a better term, degradation, so to speak, of availability of signal occurs, and then affects the GPS receivers, and I don't know whether it affects the cellular side or not, but is that where the issue really lies?
Yes, the GPS receiver is just receiving, it's not transmitting. So the interference is all, from the cellular device to the cellular tower to the GPS receiver. On the other hand, it's not all the cellular people's fault for transmitting because you have to have a transmitter and a receiver, and if you design the receiver without thinking about whether it's vulnerable to interference, and it's completely understandable why they were designed like that, but if you do design it like that, you're going to suffer from problems when people start transmitting. So you could say, okay, well, we need to get rid of all these transmitters and keep it really quiet, but spectrum's a really valuable thing, and people will end up transmitting in reasonably adjacent bands. There is cellular networks in Japan, for example, which are only slightly further away from GPS than the L band, and if you didn't worry at all about the filters and on your receivers to make sure that those signals didn't interfere, then GPS in Japan would have severe problems.
Right. So, in a very simplistic world or perspective, I guess, when you're talking about the bands and their location relative to each other. That when you were talking about that, it just jumping on the whole political conversation we're having these days, there aren't any border walls between the spectrum, I guess is one way to put it. So
that's right. Yeah, you can put some walls in there. You can put some filters on the transmitters. You can put some filters on the receivers, and hopefully those will help resolve the conflict. But it's a balance between what you put on the transmitter and what you put on the receiver. That's ultimately the issue here. You can't just necessarily load all of the responsibility onto the transmitter and not think at all about what the best design is for the receiver, because the spectrum's valuable and people want to use it for stuff, and absolutely GPS is enormously valuable. There's hundreds of billions of dollars of value a year here in GPS, but if you didn't think at all about filtering and you were vulnerable to the entire cellular spectrum, you're not going to say, okay, shut down every cellular network in the country because it might interfere with us.
Right. Without
there's
giving thought.
There's a limit here. There's a limit here to what you can actually, responsibly do.
Right, and what you can, I guess, responsibly expect.
Right.
In terms of usage, and as we were talking, there's no border walls there, so it sounds as though perhaps part of that solution, if solution is the right word, that maybe it means different design for the GPS units, or I don't even know how possible that is,
right.
But is that part of the thinking, I guess?
Absolutely. Look, different GPS receivers have been designed in different ways and have different levels of vulnerability. So there's been a whole bunch of testing over the last 6 or 7 years, and some GPS receivers are fine, and some are not. Those that are in cellular phones are... the vast majority of them, if not all of them by now, are fine because they know they're dealing with cellular signals all the time in very, close proximity in the adjacent bits of the electronics in there. Those in surveying equipment have to be more precise. So yes, absolutely, they need, wider band signals. The filters that they put in there, can't cut things off quite as sharply, but as I say, some devices out there today, and most of the ones that are sold today are almost certainly okay, depending on the power levels of the adjacent users. Some of the old ones are not, and really what the issue here is going to come down to is, what is okay, what is not. What devices are vulnerable? How do we address the issue of fixing those, if that's what needs to be done? If someone's going to make billions of dollars out of exploiting the spectrum, then usually in other circumstances it's been their responsibility to compensate the people that are being affected. So as I raised earlier, we've just seen a reallocation of spectrum from broadcasters to cellular players. There was a couple of billion dollars set aside there for moving the TV broadcasters that were left, repacking those, altering all their equipment, and fixing all the problems that were caused by that reallocation. And in other circumstances, defense equipment has been fixed.
We're going to have to go to break. We'll pick up on that when we come back, because I have a couple more questions I want to ask you about that.
Field Books. There is a difference, and the difference is made in the USA by family-owned and operated Bogside Publishing in New Hampshire. For over 38 years, the family business has produced the finest, most durable, rain-resistant, and most affordable field books in the land surveying and engineering industry. Demand the best from your supplier, Bogside Publishing Field Books.
Whether cruising the strip in a 57 Chevy or taking the family on a vacation in a 71 Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser, you need to tune in to Classic Cars with Steve Ronaldo and Jim Weber every Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Quick Stakes. Does your survey supply dealer have Quick Stakes? If not, demand that they start carrying Quick Stakes. Did you know that Quick Stakes are better for your back than your local chiropractor? Lightweight and easier to use than the old heavy wooden stake. Order a sample today and prove it to yourself. Quick Stakes, your back-friendly stake.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
And we're back with Tim Farrar. Before we went to break, Tim was talking about a lot of different things in terms of uses of spectrum and overlaps and those kind of things. And so I want to continue that conversation because, as we mentioned on the break, when each of us, regardless of who we are, when we think about whatever the effect is in this whole arena, we think about how it affects us. We don't necessarily think about what impact it might have somewhere else or how it affects somebody else's rights, if rights is the right word. So I want to continue that conversation because you were saying to me in the break, too, this whole idea of protecting coverage, if you will, or spectrum or usage. So let's pick back up on that just to get a little
right.
Further into the discussion.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, the more power that you transmit at and the closer you transmit to GPS, the more devices are going to have problems. So there's compromises that have to be found here if anything's going to move forward. And you could say, okay, well, just don't do anything in the L-band at all terrestrially. You know, that's one solution. But at some level, if you are not protecting your devices to adjacent transmitters, you would run into problems. You would run into problems in Japan where there was uses just beyond the L-band spectrum terrestrially. There are some devices that are better than others, as I say. In the cellular world, most of the devices, if not all, are now going to be fine with adjacent cellular transmissions. There have been a lot of concerns about jamming of GPS in various other circumstances as well. So you know, that protect and toughen and augment GPS has been a concern elsewhere. It's been a concern for the DoD. It's been a concern in aviation. It's clearly a concern for surveyors as well, that they don't want interference to their GPS devices. The real question here is a sharing of burden to some degree. The new devices, I think, have been improved significantly from what they were 5, 10, 15 years ago. As equipment has become more sophisticated, receivers have been improved, and everyone is benefiting from that. So the real question here is, you know, what can be done reasonably, what can be done to protect existing users, people who have old equipment, someone probably needs to pay to either fix or upgrade or replace that equipment, and there need to be appropriate limits so that equipment that is very hard to protect. I mean, there've been tests of things like receivers on other satellites and receivers in that are doing things like measuring seismic activity and the movement of the Earth's crust to detect earthquakes. There are all sorts of applications of GPS here, and some of those devices will be more sensitive than others. Some of them will require more protection than others. It really depends on how feasible it is to fix those concerns, and there's a potential here to find a balance, but both sides get overly extreme. I think it's very fair to say that the original version of LightSquared simply didn't care very much about GPS people, and it was, tough on them. It was basically the attitude, and that led to a lot of resentment in the GPS community, unsurprisingly. So there is this, continuing suspicion that maybe Ligado is just concerned about, getting billions of dollars of value for itself and not so much about protecting GPS equipment. I think there is a solution here, but I think, it's not saying, okay, no usage of this band at all by Legado, and it's not saying, let them do whatever they want with the maximum power possible. There is a compromise here. The problem is, a lot of the time, people haven't been terribly interested in finding it, and we get a lot of political lobbying, which is directed at either killing Legado or saying ignore GPS, they should have expected this years ago, and it's their fault for not improving their receivers. And none of that is a helpful line to take.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say, and as an organization here that is very sensitive to issues that go on the political arena in a broad way, not just this issue, of course, and of course legal issues as well. I think it's fair to say that regardless of the situation, when the lobbying gets involved, then it takes a whole different turn. People stop listening to each other, and so I'm hearing you say, I think if we have reasonable conversations, and I think it's important to try to figure out from my members' perspective, our members, what are the ramifications in terms of, okay, when you make this a compromise, what's that going to do? And mm-hmm. I guess part of that equation is, as you mentioned earlier, newer renditions of equipment, which obviously means you got to pay money for something.
Right.
That's part of the whole solution, the whole situation as well. But
and that's very clear that someone's got to fix the devices that are out there, and there's no question about that. I think the thing to bear in mind is, we're talking about values for Spectrum in the many billions of dollars, so there ought to be money available for fixing the problems. I mean, you probably have better statistics than I do, but I think we're talking in the surveying community about a few tens of thousands of devices out there that might need to be fixed or upgraded. So there's clearly, it's a substantial cost, but it's probably not going to run into the billions of dollars to fix the surveying equipment that's out there, especially if newer equipment is actually reasonably robust to a reasonable signal level from an adjacent Spectrum user.
Right. Yeah. So that I think that is something for our listener to think about and to realize the whole. The big picture, I guess, is the right way to put that.
And I think that the thing that we haven't heard enough of is promises to protect the users. I mean, that's mm-hmm. the thing that, probably if I, my biggest criticism of Legado and LightSquared before it has been a lack of concern for the users. It's all very well for Legado to have signed various agreements with some of the GPS manufacturers but we haven't heard coming out of that, all these devices are going to be fine that have been produced since whatever date. We haven't heard anything saying how are existing users going to be protected, who's going to pay for replacement, or how's that going to happen. Those are the sorts of things that I think it's critical to hear, and that would make all of your members an awful lot more comfortable if they knew that someone was going to make sure they weren't affected by it.
True, and I honestly believe that probably the biggest issue for our members is not hearing anything at all.
Right.
Because, when this first came out years ago with the whole LightSquared thing, of course the major manufacturers were all part of the discussion and on the save our GPS side. But this time around, we're not really hearing much of anything. When you're in that situation and nobody's sharing information with you, you get a little nervous.
Yes, and it sort of disappeared into the political process because the, you know, last time around, as you say, the manufacturers were very active. This time around, most of the major manufacturers have signed agreements with Ligado not to oppose a deployment under certain circumstances. You know, I don't think it's very clear about whether that means they're confident that all their devices that they're approving, that they're producing and selling today will operate fine in those circumstances. I assume they wouldn't have signed unless they believe that to be the case. But, you know, the testing that's going on, the debate that's going on has now shifted really to the government side, where we've had the Department of Transportation doing a lot of testing. They have come out with a set of conclusions. Ligado has sponsored some other testing by another government lab that has done, you know, come out with some results, not necessarily such definitive conclusions, but it really has ended up very much in the political arena at this point with the Department of Transportation and the Department of Defense, and we don't fully know what those people think. The testing that was done by the Department of Transportation, what they called the adjacent band compatibility study, really, you know, tried to put all the burden on the transmitters and say, okay, you know, let's find the worst performing device that we can find and the worst case amount of protection it might need. And they were trying, their conclusion was, well, if we do that, then these transmitters, these base stations might only be able to transmit at a few milliwatts of power, which is ridiculous. I mean, that's less than your Wi-Fi hotspot in your home by a factor of 10 or 100. It's, you know, if GPS devices really are that vulnerable, then it's a bigger problem than just Ligado. So you know, it's ended up in the political arena, and that's never a good place to be in terms of people understanding how this is all going to come out and how it's going to affect them, because it ends up as a bunch of slogans and a bunch of lobbying and a really not very transparent process.
And it as is a typical political issue, it ends up being a lot of talking at people, not necessarily with
right.
them.
And potentially backroom deals that no one really understands,
exactly.
What's happened.
Right. And that's unfortunately true in everything that becomes political, so there wouldn't be any reason to suspect that it would be different in this case either. As we're trying to move forward, so it'll be interesting to look at that and try to keep up with it. That's one of the things that we have difficulty with, is just being able to keep up with where everything is, because we're a relatively small organization in the overall scheme of things. You know, we have 17,000 members across the country, and that's about close to half of the licensees in the country. So just being part of the discussion is something that's difficult for us to be able to do because of our size and the kind of things that we're doing. So we got to go to break again. When we come back, maybe we can talk a little bit about where you think this is heading and what we might be able to expect.
Bogside Publishing. For over 38 years, this family-owned New Hampshire business has manufactured the most durable, rain-resistant, and most affordable made-in-the-USA field books for the land surveying and engineering industry. And Bogside Publishing is still doing it today. Demand Bogside field books from your supplier or go to bogsidepublishing.com for a list of exclusive Bogside dealers.
Quick Stakes is your answer to staking. Lightweight, easy to ride on, easy to use, easy to find, and won't break your back carrying them like the old-fashioned wooden stakes. Have you tried a sample? If not, get a pen and paper and write down this number, 800-438-0387, or go to quickstake.com, that's quickstake.com, and order your samples. Ask your surveying supply dealer for Quick Stakes today.
This is Lawyer Liz. Join me each week as we discuss drones, the Internet of Things, and all the technology in between. It's Buzz Off with Lawyer Liz, Wednesdays at 2.
Field Books. There is a difference, and the difference is made in the USA by family-owned and operated Bogside Publishing in New Hampshire. For over 38 years, the family business has produced the finest, most durable, rain-resistant, and most affordable field books in the land surveying and engineering industry. Demand the best from your supplier, Bogside Publishing Field Books.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
So we're back with our last segment today with Tim Frohr. And as I mentioned in the break, Tim, this has been a fantastic conversation. I really appreciate you being here, as I've said before. But so I guess the thing that we can talk about in our last 13 minutes or so is the future. Is, you know, are we at the point where this is going to be a tipping point or coming to a head in discussion or what?
Well, absolutely. I think it really is coming to a head at this point in time. The group that is debating this primarily is the PNT Advisory Board. That meets on November 15th. And at their last meeting, the result of the debate was that they issued a fairly critical statement to the government agencies involved, suggesting that really this was a choice one way or another between protecting GPS and authorizing Ligado, and obviously they wanted to protect GPS. I'm not sure it is a binary decision at this point in time, but you know, that's how things are being set up for this meeting on November 15th. They have invited Ligado's CEO to give a presentation about Ligado's plans. They have invited a number of other people who one would expect to be critical of Ligado's plans. And it seems like, as I say, we're things are coming to a head where the answer is intended to, you know, be positioned as a binary decision between authorizing this or not. I don't really believe that that is a good way to proceed. I can understand why people feel this this sensitive and this angry about everything, given the very long history of Ligado and its predecessors. But I do believe that there is a compromise if Ligado really put forward its desire and willingness to protect the end users. And that, I think, is what's missing. And, you know, I hope we won't have this big showdown and potentially a big fight in public on November 15th. You know, indications are at the moment that it's moving in that direction.
And you mentioned the end users. Again, all of us look at it from our own perspective, so we in the surveying world are part of that. But might be helpful to share a little information of how broad that end user group is.
Well, certainly. I mean, the high precision, you know, positioning in surveying is one of the most critical users groups in terms of the number of devices that potentially are out there that could be vulnerable. The cellular uses of GPS for mapping on your smartphones and et cetera, there are hundreds of millions of devices out there, but it's generally accepted that there are relatively few of those that are vulnerable, and certainly recently produced smartphones are very unlikely to be vulnerable. And then you have some more specialist user groups. You have timing receivers, which are used in, for example, in cellular networks and in other things like banking, et cetera, et cetera. You have some very specialist users, as I mentioned before, things like monitoring the Earth's crust, satellite services on spacecraft. There are, you know, where the number of devices involved is extremely limited, but the level of sensitivity of some of those can be even greater. So there's a whole, and then you have GPS on aircraft where there is another, you know, a big concern about routing of aircraft around. You know, one of the most striking statements that was made last time around for the original Light Square proposal was that it could delay the next gen air traffic control system, and therefore people could die because of the delays in that, in implementing the improvements in safety that come with that system. So, you know, a lot of end users out here, a lot of different needs, potentially a lot of different vulnerabilities. But I do think that the surveyors actually are probably, as a group, one of the groups with the most devices that may still be sensitive, and that may need to be improved. So I think, you know, statements, you know, to reassure them are particularly critical, as we go forward, to give comfort that, if something does happen here, then they will not be adversely affected.
Right. And you mentioned a lot of different user types and user areas. How involved are most of those groups in this discussion at all? Are they active participants, or do they sort of acquiesce to other people to speak for them?
Well, there's been an awful lot of activity with regard to the FAA and the aeronautical users. There have been working groups and analysis done specifically about the needs of helicopters and fixed-wing aircraft. I think, you know, there it's there's a fairly high level of confidence that the FAA is going to protect the needs of aeronautical users and not going to compromise those safety concerns. I think in terms of other users, it's a more diffuse environment. It's not, after all, it's not a safety critical issue when you're talking about surveyors. I mean, it's a safety issue if your building falls down, but it's or something's built wrong, but it's not a safety critical issue in the moment about protecting that receiver. So it has generally therefore been left to the manufacturers, and as we talked about before, the manufacturers have been, you know, somewhat quiet in this iteration of things, and we have to, you know, see some reassurance about how people might be affected, how they're going to be protected if, you know, in terms of replacing and repairing their equipment to make sure that there isn't an impact going forward.
Right. Because it sounds as though there could be a potential scenario where surveyors, for example, might either have to do major retooling or just buy new equipment.
Well, I would very much hope that it wouldn't involve any expense to the end user. I think it's incumbent upon Ligado, if it's going to get billions of dollars of value from authorization of terrestrial use of some of its spectrum here, that, you know, part of that goes back to the end users to make sure that they don't incur any costs, you know, other than, you know, filling in a form and saying, you know, I have this piece of equipment, someone, you know, checks it off a list and says, okay, that might be affected here, we will send you a replacement, or we'll you know, send you a filter or you know, a fix for your piece of equipment so that you're not going to be affected. You know, the one thing that I think would be unacceptable is if surveyors are incurring significant costs on their own, you know, for themselves. The Ligado and the GPS manufacturers can debate amongst themselves about exactly how much of all these costs are borne by each party. If a manufacturer has been making devices that are still vulnerable, you know, and continues to do so, then it would be potentially a warranty issue for that new equipment. But for older equipment, I think it's very fair to say that Ligado ought to be fixing that for people.
Right. So it's sort of a two-pronged kind of thing. You've got these sort of, for lack of a better term, grandfathered uses, where if somebody's going to do something that negatively affects them, you're looking at a responsibility. But at the same time, if people are continuing to make that same type of equipment, knowing that there's going to be a problem. I think that was your second point.
Right. Right. And obviously the manufacturer is going to benefit if Ligado is paying for a bunch of equipment to be replaced, a manufacturer is going to have to make that. So
exactly.
They're going to get a windfall in revenue from that point of view. So it's sort of incumbent on them to not keep making that equipment going forward, but to make a better version of it that will continue to work fine.
Right. And I guess that's a question in the layperson's mind is to what extent or what level of retooling or changing is going to be required to create that new piece of equipment that isn't negatively affected. And I don't even know if anybody knows.
There are pieces of equipment that are not. I mean, the testing that the Department of Transportation did, they showed problems when they took the worst case for the worst performing piece of equipment, but they also identified that there are pieces of equipment, including surveying equipment, that work fine. Under the assumed parameters that Ligado would like to operate under, so there is equipment that works fine. Some equipment doesn't, and they didn't identify in their testing what the brand was, what the precise serial number was of what they tested. All that was done under confidentiality because they didn't want to pick on any particular manufacturer, but
right.
That is they're clearly possible to make equipment because some of the equipment they tested was fine, and it's just a question of identifying and coming up with an agreed list of what does need to be fixed, what is already fine, what is being manufactured going forward, and is that all being manufactured in a way which is resilient.
Right. So you were talking about the hearing that's coming up. I believe you mentioned that as a hearing. Do you see that as sort of a, final phase, or is this just going to be another part of the discussion and it just keeps going?
I think that is moving things towards a conclusion. In the aftermath of this November 15th meeting, the Department of Defense and the Department of Transportation have to come up with a recommendation to the NTIA, which is another government body that looks over, uses of spectrum by the government. They will make a recommendation to the FCC, and the FCC is the agency that ultimately has to rule on Ligado's application. So, it's a multi-step process, but that is, this is sort of setting the table for that series of recommendations to take place. If those recommendations are negative, then Ligado will, be prevented from operating. If they can find some, compromise here, then they may be able to move forward.
I appreciate that. And we're 30 seconds out, so I want to make sure I thank you for being with me. This has been an unbelievably good discussion today, and I really do appreciate you being with me. This is one of the shows that I'm going to press our listeners to download and make sure they listen to it time and again to get this broad perspective that you provided to us today. So I do very much appreciate that.
Thanks very much. It's been a good discussion.
It has been, and as always, the time goes too fast. So we're time to go. But thank you again for being with me today. I do appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Take care.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.